while people are sitting down. It's true that I haven't been here sitting in this seat on a Friday night for 3 weeks, but it's not that I have a holiday or have a rest. For the first 2 weeks I was teaching a meditation retreat at Jhana Grove, a 9-day retreat. Listen, there's only 60 places down there, but it really give a lot of energy to teaching meditation. I really put some effort into that to really get people to explore this incredible, amazing journey of meditation. Some of you have only just started scratching the surface of it. Bliss beyond your wildest dreams. Whoa. Honestly, that's what it's like. And so get people to at least get a taste of that. Beautiful lights in your mind. Wow, this is brilliant stuff. And that's where you get happiness from, and energy, and really good health too. But after that finished on a Sunday, I forget what day it was then, straight in the aircraft to go to Sri Lanka. Because there's so many countries in the world where they look at me through that little lens, they're probably looking now, and of course they want me to visit and see you live. And actually this time was actually teaching monks and nuns, teaching the teachers, a meditation retreat, 120 monks and 30 nuns, teaching teachers. So that, and it's a bit sort of quite embarrassing, but actually the word really is scary in my position, that there you've got this Buddhist country of Sri Lanka for 2,300 years, really, really strong. And they invite a white monk to teach them. It's absolutely crazy. I expect them to come here and teach me. But there you go, and it's very, very popular and very powerful. Apparently many people are actually practicing that. So anyway, that was very, very tiring, but really, really worthwhile. So if I'm not here, you know, I'm just working my butt off somewhere. I don't know why I haven't got a thin butt anymore, because I work it off every week. But it was very, very wonderful and very, very enjoyable. And just, it's also to know that those of you who come here, that that little camera over there, that is a portal to thousands of people. I don't know how many people just working backwards. The flight attendant on Singapore Airlines, just on the way here from Singapore this afternoon, Ajahn Brahm, they know you straight away. That I went to listen to one of your talks in Singapore. I was really, really struggling with my life. Things were going very wrong. Thank you for helping me. Little things like that. Now, if you want to get good service on an aircraft, if you find just one flight attendant like that, you have wonderful service that day. And even at the customs. Actually, I never saw her there. I'm not sure if she's here this evening. Comes every Friday night, works in the customs at Perth Airport. So when I go through there, you know, you get your bags checked. Ajahn Brahm, are you giving a talk tonight? Yeah, I'm giving a talk tonight. I'll see you there, she says. So do I get my bags checked? No. Straight through. I live a charmed life. And everywhere else, even at Sri Lankan airport, Bandaranaike airport. The guy looked at me and said, I've seen you on TV before. Yeah. I said, Ajahn Brahm. Oh, nice to see you. Stamp. No questions asked. But anyway, it's very, very beautiful. Just hard work, but it's very enjoyable and very fulfilling. For some reason or another, that you feel that that's my life path this time. I don't know why, but so willing to do that. And there's a few times I thought, retire, take it easy, stop traveling around the world, stop giving so many talks. But then a few years ago I went to see this very great Thai monk. He's a monk, just if you haven't heard this story before, to put it in perspective. It's a monk called Ajahn Gunho. He spent a year in Bodhinyana Monastery in the early days. But this was much later when he was in the forests. In the jungles of Thailand. And that is when he had an encounter with a king cobra. A king cobra snake. And I was taught, when I learned not just the Thai language, but the Laotian language in the northeast, and also the nicknames, you know, the local slang. And that particular snake was given the name the one-step snake, you know, in Laotian. And I asked, why do you call it that? And he said, because once that snake bites you, you have one step left and then you're dead. That's the Northeast Thai sense of humour. Thank you very much. But it's very venomous. And this snake, was meditating in the jungle, and the snake came right towards them. Came to the head monk, first of all, Ajahn Gana. And he lifted up his head, opened its hood, right in front of the monk's nose. Would you be scared? All the monks saw this, corroborated, actually happened. Would you be scared? Would you run away? And look, I lived in the jungle, and it's incredible. I've seen big snakes before. Incredible how fast they can move. When you see them running, you realize there's no way you can outrun that. They'd catch Usain Bolt, no problem at all. 50 meters and he'd be gone. They're really fast in the wild. So no way he could run away. So this monk, what he did, for those of you who don't know the story, raised his hand and patted the snake on the head. Thank you for coming to visit me, he said, in Laotian. Thank you for coming to visit me. And he patted the king cobra on the head. What did the king cobra do? If the king cobra had a sound like purring, it would have emitted that sound. It loved every minute, because it's very rare to get your head patted by a human if you're a snake. Very, very rare. You know that sometimes you like having your head stroked or patted, you know, good boy, good girl, it's nice. And there the old king cobra having a great time, but everybody saw that. They didn't bite him, he was fine. And that was the same, Mike. This is my big problem. I went to see him once. I've seen him many times. Pay my respects, and I asked him, I said, look, I'm getting old now, getting tired. Let somebody else do all the talks. I want to retire. And in front of everybody, he said, Ajahn Brahm, if you retire and stop teaching and traveling, you will die. Thank you so much. So now you won't let me stop. It wasn't what I expected to hear. I wouldn't have minded it, but everyone else heard it. So anyway, that's my karma. I've got to travel and teach. But whatever your karma is, whatever you have to do, you travel and teach, that's obviously my karma. So I enjoy it. Give it everything I've got and make fun with it. And for goodness sake, stop complaining. Whatever you have to do in life, if you have to work in the tax office, that must be your karma from the past life. Don't know what you did bad. But just enjoy it. You can have fun. And honestly, I tell a lot of people they have the different jobs in life, and they're different parts, or they're retired, or they're out of work for a small while. For goodness sake, stop complaining. And enjoy it. Make something out of what you have to do in life. So simple. So for me, no complaining. Even just before I came in here, there's more books to sign. But that's nothing like last night in Singapore. Unfortunately, I don't know why people do this. There's a new book out. Perfectly, a cat book. Perfectly Content. And I was spending hours last night signing that. So, what do you do? Accept it. Embrace it. Make something out of it. And stop being negative and complaining. And a good example of that, again, is Donald Trump. Without Donald Trump, there would be not hardly any jokes going around. You just even look, I did this in Singapore, just mentioned Donald Trump, and everybody burst out laughing. It's amazing. How people, oh, he gets great sense of humour, but that's okay in Australia because what he does doesn't really affect us, I hope. Maybe. Anyway, let's see. But anyway, the talk for this evening, which has nothing to do with what I've said so far, as usual, is I wanted to give a talk on reincarnation, because we haven't talked about that for a while. Something interesting. But especially, why is it that too many people have difficulty just embracing that and accepting it and understanding it? That just, you know, couple of people talking, and don't have to be embarrassed about this, it's natural, it happens. A poor couple, apparently I married them a couple of years ago. So, you know, I gave them the blessings for their marriage, give them a big boost to start off with. And people love, you know, having a spiritual part of their blessings, of their marriage. And it really works. Now, little things. This is what I said, it was to somebody getting married in Singapore. But for goodness sake, if you're getting married, it was Singapore. If you're going to get married, please make a vow. Even if you're already married and you haven't made this vow yet, please make a vow to tell the truth to one another. So the one partner says, I will tell the truth. The other partner says, well, I will never scold you or get angry at you or get upset if you tell the truth. Because otherwise, we lie. We lie to our partner. Why? Because it's much easier to lie than to tell the truth. That they will give you a really hard time, scold you, hit you over the head, kick you in the bottom, or whatever metaphorically they will do, because they're really upset when you tell the truth. That's something wrong there. So in relationships, please, for goodness sake, tell your partner, whatever you do, whatever you want to tell me, as long as you're telling the truth, I will listen. I want to get angry, you want to kill you, want to strangle you for what you said, but I will not. And I will not make you afraid. The little story, the joke, but it's not really a joke, it was just telling just why people lie. There was years ago a man who was on being tried in New York. He was accused of murder at a time when there was a death penalty. If he got convicted by the jury and the judge, that he would go to the electric chair. So this was serious stuff. And during his testimony under oath, it was very clear that he was lying. So the judge intervened, "Sir, do you not realize the penalty for perjury, for lying under oath, is very severe?" "Yes, Your Honor, but it's far less severe than the penalty for telling the truth," which is the electric chair. So you can understand why a person would lie. So in a relationship, you have to make sure the penalty is more severe for lying than it ever is for telling the truth. If you tell the truth, amnesty. Don't like what you've done, but you told me the truth. Wonderful. Thank you. Respect the truth more than anything else, then you never lie. And if one person makes a mistake in the relationship, big mistake even, they tell their partner because they want help. They want your assistance. "I'm terrible. I did a stupid thing. I feel so bad about it." Don't scold them. Encourage them to say more about what's happened. Understand we all make mistakes. And then it means that we can learn from the mistakes. We can heal. How many of you have been punished by your parents, by your family, by your partner? "Stupid monk, why do you do that for?" "Because I make mistakes. That's why. And I learn from mistakes. And I need your help to learn." That's why we have honesty. So anyway, back to reincarnation. We call reincarnation the wandering people back and forth. And I've been just wandering around. Now, I can't understand why people don't actually accept it. A bit of history for you. In Europe, let alone Sri Lanka and India and China, in Asia, in Europe even, everybody accepted reincarnation as a fact of life. They just took it that as obvious as you die, you get reborn again. Whether it's Socrates, or one of my really interesting little stories in 543 AD. I know that number because actually 543 BC was the official date the Buddha passed away in Thailand and Sri Lanka. People say it's not quite that date, but roughly. But 543 AD, the emperor, and that time Constantinople, Byzantium, put the Pope in jail for 1 year. Imagine that, the Pope going to prison. His name was Vigilius, and it was Justinian was the emperor. And the reason the emperor put the Pope in prison for 1 year, because the Pope refused to deny reincarnation. Justinian wanted him to declare reincarnation as a heresy. The Pope refused. So it was secular forces, the government, the equivalent of Donald Trump in Byzantium in 543 AD, put the Pope in jail for 1 year. And after 1 year in jail, then the Pope relented. So, Donald Trump, don't get any ideas. You're not going to put the Pope or the Dalai Lama in jail, okay? That's what they did. And after 1 year being in jail, he changed his mind on reincarnation. For obvious reasons. It was tough in jail in those days. Not like Australian jails today. But there he goes. And 1 year later, 545 AD, that's when they held the Fifth Council of Nicaea. And that was the time Christianity made reincarnation a heresy. Before that time, accepted. Afterwards, forbidden. Even if it wasn't accepted, at least it was allowed. It was on the table to be considered, everyone for themselves. What I don't find really difficult these days, why do some people say, no way, it can't happen, it can't be. It's not even an open mind. So that's what I wanted. There's so much evidence there. You can find it if you wish. There's some people here that remember their past lives. Or why? Anyway, why is it important? One of the reasons it's important came up today. I was saying about the marriage and I got diverted. Actually, I diverted myself. I can't blame anybody, my karma. But it was the couple, they would say they had a miscarriage. Now, I'm a guy, as a monk, I've never had a miscarriage. But I have empathy. I've been with many, many, many women who have. And that's tough. And it's really hard because a guy, you can only sort of go so far and feel what it must be like. A being growing inside of you. And it makes hopes and dreams and a being coming into your life, a child. And then suddenly, you know, you have usually stomachache, really hard, and then it comes out, miscarriage. It's really tough. And they're not here this evening. A couple who live in here in Perth, their first child, everything going perfectly. So 8 months and 3 weeks, just 1 week before birth, they had an ultrasound scan. Everything going perfectly, no problems at all. They could see it was a nice little baby boy. They even gave it a name. It was called Charlie. I always remember Charlie. Because during that last week, it had turned in the womb and it had cut off the blood supply in the umbilical cord. And it was stillborn, perfectly formed. And you know, I did the funeral for them just up the road here in Wanneroo Road, in the Barrow No Day site. Did the funeral for them. And one of the very sweet pastors, they were Buddhists, so they never hurt so much because you know they knew it would probably come back again. But I remember this funeral service because Charlie was part of it and they lifted the coffin up, you know, not quite vertical, otherwise it will fall out, but you know, just a little bit back from the vertical. And the family photograph. And they wanted me in it as well. So I was in the family photograph. Charlie, you know, his stillborn child, but you know, looked absolutely perfectly formed, got in the family photograph. And then after the service, closed the coffin, did the cremation. But what I didn't see, even I didn't see this, I've heard of it before, was that when I wasn't looking, when no one was looking, They got a little ballpoint pen and they drew a line on Charlie's heel, maybe about 2 inches long. On, I think, the left heel, a little line. And she was a healthy woman. It was just accident. It was just one of those things. It does happen. No one's fault. No one's to blame. It's just, you know, the biology of the body. So, she became pregnant again. She gave birth. Her daughter, she was a daughter this time, Annie. Annie has got a birthmark on her left heel. A line. Exactly, as they drew. And that's actually quite common. People do that in Thailand a lot. And, you know, you can experiment with that. It's not just for Thai Buddhist people this happens. Everybody it happens. Because that being almost got in. They almost made it into your life. And don't ever think you only get one try at things. If you fail your driving license, you get another try. Or this one, I don't know if she's here tonight, Malaysian woman, and she was applying for her PR. And 16 times she failed her English as a second language test, which is one of the requirements for PR, permanent residence. Always getting really close, but she passed one of the tests, but the other one would just be below the 50% or 70%, I forget what it was. And she always just failed the next time that she passed that one, but failed now. 16 times she did that test. And because she was a Buddhist, she came over here to see me and said, I know why you failed. Why? You never got a blessing from me. So I gave her some chanting. And she rang up a few days later. Thank you. I passed. But, you know, is that sort of cheating? Cheating the system? It's supposed to test your English, not your ability to know a good monk. Anyway, it just gave her a bit of a boost, but she passed it. We can always do the test again. So I'm telling that family, if you have had a miscarriage, don't give up. Give that being another chance. There's some karma involved with you. They're drawn to you. Give it another go. See if it comes through. And if it does, he'll notice. In this particular case, obvious. You know, you've got the line on it. You know, you can actually, next time, even make it even more clear. Just write, you know, Charlie, C-H-A-R-L. See if that comes out. But anyway, that's very common. I've seen many, and that's the first time I've actually seen it myself. But one interesting part, just as an addition there, that Charlie, obviously a boy, and Annie, a girl, and she would come here, you know, with her parents. We were brought here many, many years ago now. I'm not sure what's happened to her. But she was a typical, really stereotypical tomboy. Never liked to play with the girls, always used to like hang out with the boys and beat them up. You know, it's only 5, 6 years of age. Really a tomboy. And it's obvious because, you know, was a boy before. So anyway, there are cases like that, and what it actually does, it takes away a lot of the terrible, terrible pain of having to lose somebody. You don't lose them. They just didn't actually make it this time. They didn't pass the test, whatever it was. They have another chance. And it's, you know, if you can actually accept that and embrace that, what a wonderful thing it is. It takes away such a lot of the sting of a separation. The worst thing is if, you know, you've got like a kid, maybe 19 or 18, who dies. And you think, what a waste. All that time just bringing up a kid, and they're just, you know, at the peak of their powers, their youth, done all their training, out there the world is, you know, to be enjoyed, explored, whatever you wish to do, and then suddenly your life is taken away. Now for many people that feels so unfair. So unfair they think it's really, really wrong. It's not good, but it happens. And if a person understood that yes, they will come back again, then that takes a lot of the pain away. Not all of it, They know they do have another chance. Everybody does have another chance at whatever you wish to do. And for those of you who've been around long enough in a life, honestly, is 70, 80 years enough to learn everything, to experience anything, to grow enough? Many of you will die not having completed your experiences, your understanding, your knowledge, still have more to learn and to grow and to experience. You haven't finished yet. So for me, it doesn't make any sense at all. Even a 70, 80 year old person can actually die and finish. I'm sorry, we want another go. We want to go around again. That's what will happen. So, why people don't understand that? That's really interesting. And one of the reasons is because we are prisoners of our cultures. What we see on the TV, what we hear from modern people, and if some people keep on saying, no, it doesn't exist, no, it doesn't exist, no, it doesn't exist, we block it out to fit in with others. Many people would accept that if they were allowed to. And I don't mean consciously, I mean subconsciously. Old is a simile, great simile, use it very often. I only found it out last year from one of my friends, Professor Bernard Carr, St. Mary College, theoretical physics, student of Stephen Hawking, close student, was portrayed in the movie of Stephen Hawking's life. He's one of my best friends. And he told me he was also interested in anything which was psychic, anything which was interesting in the world, was how this universe starts, and why it happens, how it all holds together, what actually is it, and also with the stuff which is forbidden for science. Psychic research. Ghosts. I love ghost stories. And they're not bad. They're beautiful ghost stories. Story, I don't mind telling the name, Pond, the Thai boxer, his friend's dog. Beautiful little story. He sent me some photographs of this dog which he took. The ghost dog. Came around the photograph like every other dog. Because, like many people, this is not actually Pond, the Pond's gym, Thai martial arts, Thai boxing. The first one which was opened up here in Perth. So I always look after him. He looks after us. If ever I need a bodyguard, got a few bodyguards I can call on. But anyway, I don't need bodyguards. I can look after myself. Be careful. You know, once I was, because people look at Buddhist monks and they think we all train in martial arts. They watch too many movies. Bulletproof Monk. I never seen that movie, but I heard the name Bulletproof Monk. Kung Fu Panda and other religious classics. But apparently Kung Fu Panda was fat like me, which actually tells you something. The real masters of martial arts are the big ones. Yeah. But anyway, visiting my mother in London years and years ago, and walking from her apartment to the Sri Lankan temple in Chiswick to give a talk that evening. Instead of getting someone to pick me up in a car, I'll walk. I like walking, exercise. But you had to go past one of these what they used to call sink estates. It was in South Acton. Apparently the monks in the Chiswick say it's a no-go area. Now they're afraid to walk there. It's really dangerous. Even it was dangerous then. Gangs, criminals, were there. And so I was walking down the road and one of those gangs, because it was an evening talk, they were gathering together. I don't know what they were up to. About a dozen young teenagers, big guys. And they saw me coming. There was no way around. I couldn't just do a U-turn because I'd be late for my talk. So I had to go right past them. And as I got closer, that's when they started chanting, Buddha, 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 Buddha. 12 teenagers chanting, Buddha, 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 Buddha. And I went right to them. They didn't know. I didn't know either what I was doing. But I thought that's what you're supposed to do. And then because I had shown no fear and did some sort of pose they'd never seen before, they thought, wow, you know, we're not messing with this master. And they parted and let me right through. Really cool. I wish those things were on video. I was just playing around. I was just faking it. I've never done martial arts in my life. Anyway, I'm not violent. You can't do things like that. But anyway, they didn't know that. So they went right through. And actually, where was I going with this? What was I? Martial arts. Go back. Giving a talk in London. It's supposed to be about reincarnation. I don't know where I got that from. Anyway. Oh, yes. The dog. The dog ghost. So... So here we've got the dog ghost. This martial artist, Pon Jim, his best friend had a dog. Dog got sick, like dogs do, eventually. Did dogs get reincarnated? This one did. Because what happened? Taken to the vet, nothing more you can do. So they held it in the arms. Look, this is something for each one of you. I haven't said this for a long time. If that happens to you, you've got a dog, or a cat, or a rabbit, whatever, you take it to the vet, and the vet said, I'm sorry, there's no hope, it's in pain, we've got to put it down. Don't just follow what the vet says. Just take that dog, that cat, into a quiet corner, hold it, love it, look it in his eyes, and then ask the question. Now, my dog, love you very much. Have you had enough? Do you want to die? Or do you want to carry on living for a few weeks or days? If that is your dog, you've had it in your house, in your bed, played with it, seen it grow up for a long time, you will know the answer straight away. You'll know that. I think she's not here this evening. I don't mind saying this person's name either, Judy Rushforth. She did one of the best stories. She took her dog to the vet. Vet said, got to put it down. She followed my advice, took it to a corner, held it. Do you want to die? Have you had enough? You got cancer? And the dog made clear. She felt it. No, I don't want to die. So she took it back to the vet and said, no, I'm taking it home. You stupid woman. You as a Buddhist. You Buddhists are so cruel and selfless. Selfish. You know, that dog is pain. It's going to die. You're just extending its agony, you stupid Buddhist. And they really scolded her. But she stood her ground, took her dog home. 6 months later, she took the dog back to the vet. It had made a full recovery by itself. She took it back to the vet, looked at it. It's incredible. It's amazing. It survived. You Buddhists are so wise. Totally changes his attitude. So, you know, the dog knows. The cat knows. So, you know, trust the cat's knowledge. And, you know, if you took your husband, you know, to be put down, for goodness sake, ask him, do you want to be put down? It's his choice. And you can't tell him what to do. So you've got no right to kill. Animals have a right to choose, just like you have sometimes. You know, it's called voluntary euthanasia, but that's a totally different subject. But anyway, took the dog to the vet, was injected, died in their arms, and so they went home. You know, just really miserable, upset. Apparently it was 6 days later. He got up to go to work, and he must have been a contractor, because he'd go to work every morning, and the dog would usually go in the cab with him. There's no dogs do. So, when he opened the door early one morning, the dog was outside. Couldn't be. The dog was dead 6 days ago. There was a dog exactly the same size, looked exactly the same, and ran into the house past him. He couldn't stop it. And he went back in the house and saw this dog go to every corner of his house where it usually lay down and sleep, the favorite corners. go there, lay down for a few seconds, get up again. And apparently in the patio or somewhere, they had a leaky tap, couldn't afford to find a plumber, so it was always leaking, and that's where the dog would always get something to drink, some water on a hot day, like dogs do. They just get the tap, you know, put its mouth around the tap and get some water, and that's what it did. Its old habits was just reliving one more time, and then went up to the bedroom, because before it would go to work with its master, would actually kiss the master's wife, you know, his wife. You know, like, you know, dogs, people do. You know, just the dog puts his muzzle up and the wife just kisses the dog. And because she was half asleep, you know, early in the morning, she hadn't really woken up yet, husband had to get up early, she forgot the dog was dead. So she kissed the ghost dog. So please be careful when you first wake up in the morning, be careful what you kiss. You might forget, my husband died, and you still kiss him. Because you put him down when you took him to the vet. That's only a joke. So there we go. And then after kissing the wife didn't really understand what was going on, half asleep, but she did it. And it really freaked out afterwards. And then, of course, the dog went down and wanted to get into the cab. And the guy said, no way. And the dog ran off in the other direction, never saw it again. Beautiful little story. The dog, one last visit, you know, to home, see all the people it loved, and then go. Stories like that, I find really beautiful. Life is an end when somebody dies. Wouldn't it be a wonderful thing, you know, if you had a dog and it just came back one time, say goodbye. You know, all itself, just like, you know, what you'd expect a person, a being to do. Dogs, animals are beings. They're not that dissimilar from us. Anyway, back to reincarnation. Look, I've got to do this because people always say, Ajahn Brahm, be scientific. There are more people alive today than ever died. And that's so true. You can work it out. It's a fact. There haven't been enough dead people, you know, since the planet was formed, to actually account for all the people alive today. They cannot have been reincarnated. But that is the conceit of our modern Western world. To think that human beings are something special. And that there's this huge chasm between human beings and the animals. And honestly, it's just so obvious. Human population growing, animal population decreasing. Hugely. So, it's quite obvious that all the extra human beings alive today are those who have been animals before. Explains so much. Donald Trump, guess what he was in his past life? Certainly not a human being. Well, anyone who wants to say that. But yes, and anyone who doubts, who really look, there was this scientist, I did my science, Linnaeus, his name was. He was a fellow, I think it was a Belgian scientist. He was a person who figured out the idea of species. You know, again, as many, and there's one of these guys who knew so much, who had all the beings, animals, insect, creepy crawlies which existed on planet Earth, known at that time, and categorize them, as like scientists like to do, into the species. But then he got into a big problem. I think he actually wrote in his autobiography, his letters, his one scientific error. He said, I knew I was making a mistake here, but if I did not, you know, just abandon my principles and actually lie, my work would never have been taken seriously. And that was when he put human beings, Homo sapiens, chimpanzees and gorillas, I think, well, I don't know what the Latin name was, but they put them in separate species. When everything he knew meant that we are in the same species. Human beings, Homo sapiens, gorillas, chimpanzees, we are, according to him, one and the same species. Nothing really to distinguish us as far as that species thing is concerned. But he knew if he had published that 150, 200 years ago, I don't know the time, he would have been not taken seriously. Human beings are conceited, arrogant. We think we're so much better than every other animal which walks this planet. And we are somehow special. We have got language. We can talk to one another. Check out, I always mention this, when you go home, Google Alex the Parrot. He's my favourite parrot in the whole world. Unfortunately, he passed away. But Alex, second word THE, third word PARROT. You get so many videos. These are real. They're the parrot who can talk and have conversations with you. Not just conversations of, you know, Pretty Polly or just, you know, pieces of eight. This parrot was taught language using a system developed for educationally difficult kids. And this parrot has conversations. It's amazing. It's spooky when you first watch it. Many videos of him. And, you know, he says, can I go now? I'm fed up. I don't want to do this anymore. It's a parrot with attitude, and it expresses it in language. It's only simple language, but it's talking with people, having a conversation, and it's not special effects. This is not DreamWorks, not Spielberg. This is a real parrot, and this real parrot, apparently, he started teaching other parrots how to speak. And there's one video, it's really funny, he says, you're not saying it right. One parrot talking English to other parrots. Check it out. And it's not just for fun. It's actually showing that beings, animals, are not that different than you. Not that different. You give them a chance to learn language. Coco, the African gorilla in New York Zoo, they taught Coco sign language. And he talks to himself. They catch him on video in his cage doing sign language, actually talking to himself like other beings do. So, when you see that, it's not such a strange thing to expect human beings, animals, we can actually come and go between one another. Especially now, many people alive today, animals before. No big deal. Animals are cool. Dogs. Look at your dog. How many of those who are with dogs really close pets? You know, these days they don't eat dog food. They eat what you eat. I remember one of my favorite cartoons. I've got to finish soon. I'm just rambling. But one of my favorite cartoons of this family at a dinner table having their dinner. You know, sometimes how the dog comes up to beg? But this time the dog comes up with a revolver. I said, I'm done with begging. I can imagine the dog gets fed up, having to beg all the time. I don't have to beg. But anyway, the animals, they do have those abilities. So that's what explains one of the things. The other thing is why not? Oh yeah, this is back to, okay, we'll be finishing pretty quickly because it's almost... When it gets to my friend Bernard Carr, when he was the Fraupot experiment, amazing experiment. I said it many times, just in brief. Imperial College London, science, hard science, one of the top science universities in the world, and lots of physicists, researchers, people trained to observe, were invited to see a demonstration of levitation. Why? How they got these people to come in the first place was the first achievement. But they all came thinking this is rubbish, but they respected their friend who said, I'm going to show you levitation. And they were seated first, and the experimenter was going to do the demonstration of levitation walked into the lecture theatre with a flower pot, put it on the table so there could not be any wires, said, I'm now going to levitate this flower pot in front of you. You can get your cameras out, your videos, your iPhones, video it. And they also had professional cameramen there as well. Because if it worked, this would be groundbreaking in scientific conditions in front of professors, hard-nosed physicists, they were going to levitate a flower pot. And he said, I would need your help. And he said, I would need everybody in this room to help by creating atmosphere. I want you to chant Om. Om. And apparently all his professors all started chanting Om. That was his second major achievement. It would be wonderful to see that. All these old professors going Om, 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 Om. And that was when the flower pot rose in the air. It actually levitated. They did it. It was filmed. And the point of the experiment was, afterwards, a couple of those professors said it never levitated. It stayed on the table all the time. It's called psychological denial. Even though it rose up in the air, it was so against what they thought was possible. It challenged their views so deeply they couldn't even see it. It never even came to their conscious awareness. It was blocked out before they saw it. And of course, you've heard the story before, it wasn't levitation. There was a huge, gigantic electromagnet underneath the bench. And when he turned on the power, such large currents needed to raise a flower pot always make a hum. And they needed all the professors to go Om to mask and disguise the huge electric current which was now flowing. It was a trick, but that wasn't the point of the experiment. To show how we are in denial of the truth when it doesn't fit our culture. Because we think, no, it can't happen. It can't be reincarnation. And even though many people in this room know it's true, proved it, had experiences, if not in deep meditation, in hypnotic regression, they know it's true. They've been there, they tested it out. Check details which you cannot find any other way. They're convinced. But can you convince others? No way. Why? Because it can't be true. Be careful of that. Can't be true. If you want to be fair, if you want to be devoted to truth, you have to be open to things which sometimes you find hard to understand. You cannot get your mind around it. So don't reject the evidence of life. You have to change your attitudes of life to accommodate the truth. Never allow your learning to stand in the way of truth. Those couple of professors, their learning told them levitation is impossible. And it stood so squarely in the face of truth, what was happening in front of their eyes, they never even saw it. Did not register in their consciousness. Be careful. So anyway, I've only just touched the surface of reincarnation. But I know it's true. See you again. Another place, another time. Thank you for listening. Very good. Here we go, some questions. Okay, here we go. Okay, this is from Norway. This is a deep question. The Buddha, I don't know if you should actually have these intellectual, this is good for a sutta class, you know, for tomorrow. Cessation of birth is happiness, but if we cease to be, we can't experience this joy right. And isn't this impermanent too? So nirvana ends eventually. Look, I have to actually to push this aside, and maybe, can we actually answer this on a sutta class on Sunday afternoon? Because that is more appropriate to that class when it's deeper into the teachings of the Buddha. So I'm going to pass that question now. Please, I will answer it. Please, can you keep this for Sunday afternoon, a sutta class? We often say that bad things can happen to good people and good things happen to people who don't seem to deserve it. Is this like their karma from the past life? Bad things happen to good people. Sometimes you don't know, are they really good people? Are you such a good person that bad things can't happen to you? Somebody doesn't realize what you're really up to. No, look, this was explained to me by a prisoner, incarnate prison farm, many, many years ago. He said to me once, he said he was put in prison for something he didn't do. He said he never did that robbery for which he was convicted in a court of law and put in jail. He said, honestly, not making it up, wouldn't lie to you, I never did it. And I believed him. You know, there's been many innocent people who have been put in prison. So I thought I should help this guy. I know lawyers. So as I was thinking who I'm going to call as soon as I get out of jail, that's when he interrupted my train of thought. And he smiled at me. He's in his maybe about 50 years of age, in and out of jail all his life. But he said to me, he said, Ajahn Brahm, you know, honestly, I never committed that crime for what I've been put in jail for. But, he said, there are so many other robberies where I wasn't caught. I guess it's fair. That's karma. You get put in jail for something you didn't do, but there's many things you got away with where you weren't put in jail for. Good things can happen to people who do not seem to deserve it. Oh yeah, for a while. They'll get it. They'll get theirs in the end. And it's true that sometimes, what is a good thing anyway? Sometimes they get rich and win the lottery, but that ruins their life. Was it that guy in the United States who won the lottery and then 1 year later he was actually given a jail term for about 20 years? And he got crazy. It just messed up his whole life. And he said, the worst thing ever happened to me was won the lottery. I mean, honestly, it's really dangerous. You lose all your friends because they only come there for money. You don't trust them. All your relations you've never seen before, come up. And you have all these begging letters for people trying to swindle you out of your money. Oh, it's just such a pain. It's been known, psychology, sociology, if you win the lottery, you're in big trouble, a lot of suffering. So if anyone does win the lottery in the next few weeks, I can help you out of your suffering. So we'll take all your money for the temple, and then you'll be happy. Nah, I'm only messing around with you. So, bad things happen to good people. You know, if you're really a good person, a bad thing can't happen to you. Other people might think it's bad, but you just, like water for duck's back, it's dung for your mango tree. Extra fertilizer to become sweeter. Bad stuff is just fuel for my compassion and wisdom. So bring me more bad stuff. And so it's bad things. I don't call them bad things. I call them opportunities, difficulties, struggles in which you can grow from. Anyway, last one. Could you please explain how coincidences and karma are connected? I mean, there are people who suffer so incredibly and I cannot see how they could be responsible for it. Indeed. But you know, sometimes you look at suffering. And I look at it in a different way sometimes. Please don't just accept accepted ideas of what actually suffering really is. A lot of people got a lot of wisdom, kindness. And if you just put it in just one life, yeah, it seems really unfair. They suffered so incredibly, I'm responsible for it. What happened in the next life, and the next life afterwards, and the life after that, and the life after that? If you put a big picture in suffering, then sometimes, you know, many people have told me this, at the end of the life, the suffering was worth it. And then I just remind you, next Tuesday, I have to go to the Cancer Support Association in Cottesloe to give a talk. Go there once a year. And I love going there. Don't say I have to. I just want to. And people with cancers, this is like being in a concentration camp for sometimes years. I don't know if anyone's ever had chemotherapy. Well, that's really tough sometimes. You're really sick, tortured for a long time. Hopefully that doesn't happen to anybody who's listening. And there's ways we can actually help lessen that. But you know, every time I've seen people at the Cancer Support Association, when I first saw this, I thought they were crazy, but they kept on saying this again and again and again, the best thing that ever happened to me, getting cancer. Whoa! I'm not saying that. I can't say that. I've never had cancer. But these people did. And that's what they said. Not just one, hundreds of them. What the heck can they mean? The best thing that I suffered so much? They said, yeah, it was really unpleasant, uncomfortable, painful, but I learned so much, I grew so much, I understand so much more. So I didn't like it at the time, but it was the best thing that ever happened to me. Wow. So sometimes you wonder, what is suffering and how we use it? Sometimes it is the best thing that ever happened. Terrible at the time, you can't see that at the time. But later on in your life, especially at the end of your life, all the difficulties and problems you face, you find a meaning to it. That means it's the best thing. Life is not just to have a good time, to be free from suffering. The suffering and the pain is where we learn and grow. Teachers at my school, which I hated, the toughest teachers, some of those were the ones I learnt the most from. Hated them at the time, but wow, they really pushed me, and I learnt so much. Thank you. So anyway, any questions from the floor while I'm here? Before the monsters come in. Have the monsters come yet? Not yet. Okay, still looking for monsters. The monsters are on the way. Very good. Riding late. Monsters are always late these days. It's not like the old days. You can't trust a monster these days. So any questions from the floor tonight? And of course, many of you may have memories and old anecdotes of reincarnation, people remembering stories when they're first born. You know, great stories which I've collected over the years. One of those was this little girl. You know, she's a Buddhist, her father was a Buddhist. And when she was born, just after this guy's auntie had passed away. And her auntie, she was a businesswoman in Sydney. And one of her characteristics, she never or did anything to stop paying tax. She hated paying tax, just like Donald Trump. And when she died, you know, her nephew gave birth to a baby. And as it always happens, if someone gives birth to a baby, all the family come round to have a look. And everybody said, wow, that looks like your auntie who died a few months earlier. Looks so much like her. And he told me all of the stuff which happened in the family, which proved to him, he's accepted, that was his auntie reborn. Came in with a coffee cup. No, that's what he inherited, some of her crockery. That's my cup, Daddy, give me my cup. Only about 3 years of age. When they went past the mansion, Daddy, I want to go mansion, I want to go my mansion. But the best was when they were going down one of the motorways in New South Wales. And there was a huge billboard about tax from the New South Wales government, or the federal government. And this little three-year-old said, Daddy, what does tax mean? And of course, it's hard to explain to a three-year-old what tax is. Said, look, if you get any pocket money or you earn any sort of dollars, you have to give part of that to the government. That's called tax. And this three-year-old turned around and said, Daddy, if I get any money, I'm never giving any of it to the government. characteristics, you know, from a previous life. Why would a 3-year-old be interested in tax? It'd be just so negative to paying tax. And so, you know, you have all these characteristics we got from the past. It explains so much. And if any of you have ever given birth, you know, or you've been a father, you held your child in your arms for the first time, and you look at that kid. As a mother, as a father, you know this has come with history. It's not a blank slate. It's not just a photocopy of mum and dad. It's something extra. So if you haven't done that yet, young women, when you give birth, hold your kid. Hold your kid close, look at it. And it's so obvious. This is a being with history. It's come from a distant place. It has memories. It has character. You can see that. You know what happened to one mum who came here quite a few years ago now? When she gave birth, still in hospital, first few days, gave birth and the baby was breastfeeding. You know, so now on those beds, you know, it's lifted up, so you weren't flat on the bed, you were sort of, you know, 20, 30 degrees or something from the horizontal. And the baby just finished breastfeeding. And she told me this, freaked the mother out, that's why she came and told me. She said, after breastfeeding, the baby just crawled onto her belly, sat up, crossed its legs in full lotus position, put one hand over the other, closed its eyes, and for all intents and purposes looked like it was meditating, right on her belly. And that freaked her out. But you can understand, just after a good meal, have a nice peaceful meditate. Nothing else to do for a baby. Satisfied, comfortable. And it was actually meditating on her belly. Where on earth did it learn that from? So there's lots of ideas, lots of experiences like that. And yeah, we can't convince scientific community, because how can you measure that? Past or future? Now, how can you measure the past? Well, apparently you can. It's Ian Stevenson. I'm just filling in until the monsters come. Ian Stevenson. Just Google him. He did these 20 cases suggestive of rebirth. And I met one of those kids once. I gave a talk many, many years ago. Again, it was in London. And this kid came up to me, about 17, 18 years of age, and said, I was one of those kids interviewed. And he said it was the worst thing I ever did in my whole life. Tell people I'd been reincarnated. Yeah, if you need to go, please go. But be careful when you go to the car park, because there's monsters around. So, that when he was a kid, he was interviewed by this Ian Stevenson. Everything just matched. His memories, the village, the parents. He'd never been there before. Could prove he'd never been there. Intimate information, couldn't have got from anywhere. And what happened was that he was interviewed. He got well known in school as a kid who could remember his past life. He got so bullied at school. Because you know what happens at school? If you're a little bit different, a bit strange, you get bullied by the other kids. So if any of you do remember your past lives, if you're a kid, keep it quiet. Otherwise you have hell at school. And he talked to me, but I could feel this pain. I wish I'd never done that. I just got such a terrible childhood. You know, because I was strange. I was weird. So sometimes that happened. But I did say that I was going to tell Venerable Boot's story. Great little story. From his village in the Punjab. Because, please, can you correct me if I get it wrong? In the village, there was this one elderly lady died in the morning. And so they quickly, you know, according to Sikh custom, to arrange the funeral that day. But before they had actually arranged the funeral, they collected the wood for the pyre. Everything was ready. And then she woke up. She wasn't dead. But she told the story, what happened. Because about, was it an hour afterwards that another woman died? In the evening, another woman died. And what had happened was she said that when she died, left her body, She was taken by these two little spirits to this place where there's a big spirit, and the big spirit started scolding the two small spirits. "You've got the wrong woman! Take her back!" So they had to take her back, and when she got back, that's when she woke up. And they took the right woman afterwards, because it was two people with the same name in the village. Because in the Punjab, every man is called Singh. They've got the first name, but Jim Singh, or not Jim, but party names, Vijit Singh, or, and every woman is called Kaur, you see? Kaur. And so the surnames are always the same. Every woman has the same surname. Every man has the same surname. Just the first names. It just happened they had the same first name. So the spirits got the wrong woman. So they had to take her back and get the right one next time. Second time was lucky. It was that woman, she actually died and got cremated, yeah. Stories like that are really cool. I love those. And they say there's one of the famous monks. This is actually, remember Ajahn Sujato? This is Ajahn Sujato's teacher in Thailand. And he told once, he let it pass, how his earliest memory. His earliest memory was actually seeing this incredible light and then sort of being taken out of the lake. Born in a lake. The full story is this. That in the village in Thailand, this little, the elder brother and the younger brother, they were playing by the lake, and this young man fell in the lake. And I think the elder brother, I think it was actually his sister. And his sister ran back to the village to get help. And they searched for the body, I think all day. And they found the body in the evening, sort of, the bottom of the lake, drowned. Many, many hours, 7 or 8 hours, this young man had been in the bottom of the lake. And they dragged him out. And they had a custom, there's all sorts of weird customs in village life, to drag him, to the village, maybe to get the water out. And as they dragged him to the village, he came to. And he said, "This was my first memory. Incredible light, and then I came into this body and I was alive." And he became a really great meditation teacher. Was it that first boy? Or was it a case which I've heard happen a couple of times, corroborated, that body, the first being who was in that body, passed away? Is it underwater for hours? But somehow or other, maybe because it was cold, that body was still viable, could still live in it. And this other being, very special being, came and entered that body and became a really wonderful teacher. Very famous monk in Thailand, but I will not tell you who he is. So, amazing stories. And I love amazing stories, collect them. Weird births, weird memories. And one of the weirdest, because I know sometimes say, how can you say reincarnation? Because people always think you're reincarnated as a famous, well-known being. And that's very rare. There's one case where that did happen, it seems. I think I mentioned one of his stories. This is a Thai monk called Ajahn Lee from the northeast of Thailand. He was like one of Ajahn Chah's contemporaries. And he was a monk, when he was wandering in the jungle, he sat down under a tree and he realized it was an ant's nest. And the ants kept on crawling all over him and biting him. So then he did the loving kindness meditation. And instead of actually biting him, they actually went down and they stopped biting him and had a big circle around him. Two meters of no man's land. That was this Ajahn Lee. And he told his close monks that in his previous incarnation, he was the Emperor Asoka of India. Now he was a very famous monk who doesn't lie. He named his temple in south of Bangkok Asokarama, exactly the same name as Asoka's temple he built in Pataliputra in Patna. And even more amazing, in full public gaze. He was giving a big Dhamma talk in the town of Ubon at Jan Chah's place. And out of nowhere, from the ceiling, this medallion dropped out. It's now in his museum. People saw it. Hundreds of people. A medallion of Emperor Asoka. They don't have any medallions like that in Thailand. Which is amazing. So they have amazing stuff. Okay, look, if anyone needs to go to the toilet, yeah, don't all go to the toilet at the same time, otherwise it'll be a big crash. But if you just want to go, I'm just saying a few words. Anyone got any interesting questions to ask before the... Yeah, okay. They're here now. Okay. But we'll take this question just as they get ready. Yes.
When you were talking about reincarnation, I was with the different species and stuff, and you talk about the precepts of Buddhism not to harm any being.
Yeah.
Doesn't that itself sort of preach veganism?
Yeah,
in other words.
Yeah, we try to actually limit the harm of animals in whichever way we possibly can. So even like animal experiments as well. Because if you're close to an animal, would you do an experiment like that on your dog? So if you actually see that, yeah. It's only if you really, 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 really have to. So be very careful, just respect animals and respect humans as well. We're one and the same. Here we go. Okay, here comes the monsters. So I'm going to be quiet now. So please, if you can, stay behind, because the monsters have all come from Rockingham to scare you all. Anyway. Yeah, they're coming in here. Can I have people on the sides, please? Because they're going to come and do their stuff. So on either side of the little walking mats. So if you can sit on either side of the walking mats, so they have a full way to do their tricks here in the hall. This is an old tradition. At our temple, so we can celebrate. Here we celebrate three new years every year. We have January the 1st, we have February the 13th, it's a Sri Lankan, Cambodian, Thai New Year, and the new moon to the full moon, usually in January, February, it's the Chinese New Year. It's a lunar festival from the new moon to the full moon. So it's still part of Chinese New Year for 15 years. And for this year, as you all know, it's the year of the rooster. And so this year, I'm not sure if KFC are doing special rates because it's the year of the rooster. That didn't go down very well. But we're waiting for the monsters to arrive. It's very cute. I remember once